so glad you all came to see us. This is wonderful. This is fabulous. And we can be flexible, right? This is what I ask all my clients to do, is to be flexible with difficult situations. I'm like, it's so easy. Why don't you just do it? Things will move. Okay.
Can you just go through it?
All right. We did this presentation last year here at Sunstone, and we're trying to expand on it this year. So I guess my first question is, before I even say that, they did say that if anybody wants to get this recording for free, they can have it. So take advantage of that because of the room issues, especially if you're turned away. So if anybody comes in and looks like, oh, I don't even want to go in there, let's let them know that. If anybody's trying to come in and decides not to come in, if those of you can let them know.
They can go to the registration desk and get the recording for free because the room was overfull.
Okay. Can I ask who was at our presentation last year by chance? 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, not very many of you. Okay, good. So we apologize if we repeat, but hopefully, you know, we're in a culture of repetition being wonderful. So, you know, you'll learn from us. And you'll learn even more this time, right? So, yeah, we'll do the four-year kind of course of this particular presentation, right? We can do that. Yeah. Okay. All right, I'm going to turn over the time to Jen to just kind of start us out, and then we will get going as far as my interrupting her and inviting you all to participate as well, which we want this to be highly participatory.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, Mormon Thinking Errors is the name of our presentation. This is kind of a brief outline. So we're going to go thinking errors and self-defeating beliefs is something we often deal with in therapy. Helping people recognize them, knowing what they are.
Believe it or not, it's not just a Mormon issue.
Yes. In every culture, you're going to find these things. And we are definitely very good at a lot of these. So we'll kind of get to some examples of that, go over kind of the basic principles of that, and then get to some of your ones that maybe you want to hear reframed, hopefully, for participation. In fact, I'm going to go ahead. If you guys think of any, some of your thoughts that you might want to find a healthier way of reframing it during it, I'm just going to hand those out.
Well, I'll give an example first. So, like, I worry all the time about upsetting other people. Anybody relate to that?
Yep.
So rational response, an example of that would be, I can't always do things that please others. Other people have to take responsibility for handling their feelings. Mom. And then write down 5 things that no one knows about you but you would like to tell them. So kind of like some strategies to kind of take the initial thought that comes into our brains, which we have no control over. Our thoughts and feelings, remember, are not controllable, only what we do with them. So we'll hand some of these out, and maybe you can come up with some ideas of what are some of the dialogues that come up for you automatically. And I don't know if we'll have enough, but you guys can pass those out and around. Oh, see, this is flexible.
We're
all being flexible.
Yeah. Okay. Fire guy.
Yeah, no fire men allowed, and women, yes. Okay.
So, to start out with, like, this principle that we're going to kind of be applying to different situations is, so we have our, I guess I have it up here, we have our thoughts, our feelings, and we have our behaviors, and our feelings aren't necessarily good or bad, they just are. Often we're judging our emotions, we're like, oh, I shouldn't feel bad, I shouldn't feel angry. I shouldn't feel sad.
Can everybody hear Jen okay?
She can speak up a little bit more.
I don't tend to have that problem because I'm a loud mouth, but my darling Jen is more soft spoken.
Can they record without a mic?
There's no mic.
Yes, they are recording.
Oh, it's right there. Okay.
Right here, yes.
Okay.
Thoughts and feelings are not bad, sorry.
Feelings are always valid, is something I say. If we're constantly judging the way we're feeling, it's just kind of self-defeating, and it's not very helpful. However, there is definitely this relationship between our emotions and our behaviors inner thoughts. So, if someone tells you, okay, stop feeling angry. Has that ever worked?
Are you okay
this way?
Okay, I will. Right now.
Depression's gone. It was that easy. No. But if we look at maybe some of our behaviors and we can change that, that can have a huge effect. As well as looking at some of our thoughts, some of our thinking errors. We'll also go into where our thoughts come from, which come from our core beliefs. And of course, if we're feeling good, this is also going to be easier. If we're having positive thoughts about ourselves, we're going to probably be calmer and less nervous, things like that. So that's just kind of the basics of cognitive behavioral therapy. So, two people can have the same situation that they go through, and they might have a very different reaction to it, depending on what their belief is about what happened to them. And that really matters. So it's important to kind of challenge our beliefs. How helpful are they? Are they really benefiting us?
How many of you have tried to logic somebody into thinking like you do? How well has that turned out for you? Right? So that's a really good example of what works for me and how I think through something and what makes sense to me very clearly, obviously, isn't necessarily what somebody else's experience is going to be. And we have this fallacy that logic is the turning point to having people change their mind, when actually it's emotion and values systems. So that's why we have the political discussions we do, right? That's why we have the religious differences we do. That's why we have, even amongst a group of Mormons or Catholics or Jews that come from the same culture, you can have a very different spectrum of what they find helpful or not helpful.
And on here I have some, when people don't agree with us, some of the thinking errors we often use is, oh, they must just not know. So we just need to teach them. Okay.
How many of you like to be taught if you haven't paid for a class? Okay, good. We have that in person. So feel free to share all your knowledge with us.
You mean you only feel like you have to pay for it in order to enjoy?
Well, I guess I'm being facetious a little bit, but I usually tell people nobody wants, especially their spouse or friend, to be their missionary teacher or parent.
I get it.
Right? And that usually happens at about age 2. We start not liking that, right?
Yes.
Unless we welcome it. Unless, yes, I would like to learn you, or you have something that I'm interested in, and it's more of an invitation. But as far as somebody coming and saying, so unless you open the door to the missionary and say, come in, or unless you pay for a class, or unless you invite somebody, you're usually not wanting your peers to treat you in those roles. Right? Okay.
My hand's down.
So, and the second one, very common. They're just not as smart as I am if they don't agree with me. and these are all normal things. We all do it. Yeah. The third one is probably the most damaging here is, if they think differently than I do, they're evil. We see that a lot in politics. Pretty common. And it's not very helpful for dialogue. So...
And this applies to all of us, right? So as usually when we hear that, we're like, oh, yeah, I can think of Paul and Susie and Megan who did that to me just last week. We're less aware of like, oh, maybe I did that. And I remember the day that I had the realization that I was judging people in church for being so frickin' judgmental. And then I was like, oh, crap, that means I'm judgmental. Oh, I was so happy in my judgmental stance and all with my scrunchy face in church, and now I can't do that anymore. So, yeah.
So this is a list of the top 10 thinking errors. Everyone uses this. I really want to normalize this. Every day you will find yourself using these. So it's not about don't judge yourself for using these. We all do. If you're not aware of it, you might want to do some work there to acknowledge it. But
The two-sided coin to this is the reason that we do this is because if we had to consider every single point of data every single day, we would go crazy. Yeah. So our brains are meant to label and organize and kind of simplify things so that we don't have to get up every morning and wonder if I should, you know, be a Mormon today, or should I be married today, or do I have a child today, right? And so, I don't know how many of you saw 50 First Dates, but yeah, that's somebody who has to do that every day, right? And so our brains have biases and discriminations, in a sense, for healthy reasons. It's just that sometimes they get in the way, right? So it's a two-sided coin. There's positives about that, and there's negatives about it.
So this first one, all or nothing thinking, you know, everything about a book might be, it's all true or it's all false, or a person is all good or all bad. We do that in Mormonism. Definitely.
Those are my moments with Bednar and others, yes.
Yes.
Like, why?
Yes. I may have said some positive things earlier.
Yes, exactly. No, I can always find two sentences at least that I love.
Sure. That's really good. when it comes to ourselves, often we discount the positive. You know, we tend to be perfectionists here, especially Utah County. Mormonism, very common. Jumping to conclusions, thinking we know what the future is going to be, and then things don't really turn out how we planned, for example.
Well, we come from an equational culture. If you obey the way, you know, word of wisdom, go on a mission and stay a virgin, all will be well, right? Until marriage. Yeah, that doesn't turn out that way so much. Or we're a culture that judges not only behavior, but thought, right? So thinking about a woman in a lustful way is just as bad as adultery, right? Like, that's kind of a crazy thing, but it's there, and we've all kind of internalized that in some way. So there's reasons why we have these distortions.
But I was even taught on my mission to give promises to people. If you do this, fill in the blank, you will get this blessing. Now that can kind of...
If you feel this, it means dot, dot, dot. Right?
When it could be multiple things. Yeah. I don't know if I want to go through all of these because I want to get more into applying the situations. Should statements, I will say, we're very good at that as a culture. I should be reading my scriptures every day. I should be waking up and I should never be, you know, using these really things that are not helping us feel better.
A super helpful scripture is, you are saved after all you can do, which I don't know how you measure that,
right.
But I think that means I need 3 hours of sleep only. Because I can always read a little more in my scriptures, I can always pray a little longer. I mean, there's just no end to how we define that. And you have somebody who has OCD in our culture, and that gets really unhealthy really quick. And usually in the ward setting, those people will actually be promoted because it's like, oh my gosh, you read your scriptures 2 hours a day. That's phenomenal. I can't do that. You must be apostle material. Not that I'm diagnosing any of the apostles.
Another one I have to mention here, blaming the victim. That's kind of a pretty common one, I think, just in general for humans. And I think that comes from a good place of we want to believe the world is safe. And as long as we don't do certain things, that will be safe. And often we project that onto other people when they've been raped and they, you know, maybe they did something wrong. When, no, that's not their fault. Yes.
I think we see that predominantly in our Mormon culture with women regarding, well, she shouldn't have been wearing that, or she shouldn't have let, especially sexually or sexual objectification. I see that all the time in my practice, that bishops couldn't understand sexual assault because, well, why did she let him in her room? Like, there's still that victim blaming and not acknowledging that the act was not consensual.
And actually, this is way beyond a Mormon problem. This is still in our legal courts every day, absolutely, where women are blamed for what they wore, what they were drinking, where they were at. So it's really a puritanical issue, I think, that we come from, you know, in our country, and it's a real problem, yes.
And I think even in a different way in our Mormon culture, I know I felt this when I was saying, you know, I'm just not able to feel God's presence right now. I'm not able to connect. It was always, what did you do?
Yeah.
What did you do? You're doing something wrong. You're not doing the things. You're not doing it right. You're not Mormoning hard enough.
Or we hijack people's experience with God because they're not doing right things. So we actually tell them, if you are sinning in these ways, you will not be able to access God.
Yes.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
Do we all need to take a deep breath? I have sat at therapist meetings like this, and we're all like, because we do this with a room full of therapists, and we're all like coming from different cultures and religions, and I'm like, well, your object lesson was like 5 times more traumatic than my object lesson, and we're all just like re-traumatized, right, by our shared experiences, so we all have to remember to breathe. Yes.
Speaking of blaming the victim, I'm also thinking of how. So I've been coming, going to the sessions related to like the FLDS.
Oh yes.
And how some of the conflict related to the outside world and these polygamist groups,
mm-hmm,
comes from sort of a victim blaming attitude of, well, you're getting all of this stuff happen to you because you're just behaving wrong, and you just need to change and get out.
Oh,
where
yeah.
Sometimes, where it's like, yeah, we're losing our homes.
Yeah, it's much more complex, right, than usually just like, even with us as Mormons, one of the main complaints I get from my clients who've seen a non-Mormon therapist, it's like, well, if you're so unhappy in your Mormonism, why don't you just go to a different church?
Exactly.
Well, you know, that's really hard for a lot of people. Plus, we're not the type of church that you can go to a different ward, right? Like Catholics, if you don't like your pastor over here, well, you find another pastor across town, right? Or we just don't have that geographical setup even in our culture. So, yes.
Anybody suggest to the general authorities that perhaps worthiness interviews for 12-year-olds and 13-year-olds is not a great idea? Can we just drop the word worthiness at all from
religion? Right. And again, the cultural context of the word worthy. Like, I remember we had a Southern Baptist black woman convert to our ward, and she was all about, you know, and I don't mean to be disrespectful, but just her aura, she was so self-confident and, you know, like, hell yes, I'm unworthy. I need Christ.
I love it.
Right? That's a very different relationship with the word worthy than we have in our cultural context, which is worthiness equates whether or not you get to participate in certain rituals,
right,
whether you qualify, right? We have a very unhealthy relationship with grace, where she comes from a religion where, yes, you can be unworthy and connected to God and participate, and it's just kind of an acknowledgement that we're not perfect, right? So she had a much healthier, I loved that. I wish I could have videotaped her saying that and, like, using it.
Yeah, this idea, we're all human, and mistakes are just a way for us to learn and to become better, and in whatever cover we're going to define that, and kind of taking that authority back. Yeah, just quick thought on also blaming the victim from earlier when we were talking about, it's so interesting, our first question for women is, if they've been raped, oh, what were you wearing? And the research actually shows that there's no correlation, and there may be a little bit of correlation that if you're wearing something immodest, whatever that means, that you're less likely to get assaulted.
You got to be pretty darn confident to be wearing a slutty dress.
Yeah.
And I say that with all the love to the word slutty. I'm claiming that word.
It's possible.
There's also one other thing I'll say about that is the freeze response for any type of trauma, but especially rape. That's an actual response where people will just shut down and say, well, why didn't you scream? Why didn't you ask for help? You know, why didn't you say no? Not understanding that the freeze response is very valid.
Yeah, you don't have control over that when you freeze. Yeah. So a couple examples. do want to get into... Okay, so this was one... How are we doing on time?
We're good.
Okay. Recently, you heard, the hardest way to live is the best way. That's kind of one of those unspoken beliefs in Mormonism.
If it's hard, we're peculiar. If we're persecuted, we're on God's side. Right? So how many, you know, people make choices that are probably not maybe the healthiest choice for them or the best choice for them because, well, I'm expected to do hard things. I'm expected to go out on a limb. I'm expected to alienate my neighbors by being the missionary, right? I'm expected to, right?
This is used on LGBT people.
Absolutely.
In a devastating way.
It's like, just a challenge in this life.
You know, you're going to suffer and be alone your whole life.
That's okay.
God wants you to have a hard life. And right? That's how you grow.
You'll learn and grow from being celibate and lonely and suicidal. That's fine.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Okay.
So, any thinking errors from that list that you would point out with that statement?
That if it's easy or joyful or like that there's any ease to it, that something must be wrong, that all or nothing approach, right?
Yes.
If it's not hard, totally. If it's not devastating, then you're choosing the easy way out.
You're choosing the easy way out. We see that a lot with divorce.
Oh, yeah.
That's the easy way out, when actually the research shows that most people who get a divorce have been struggling for about 8 to 10 years in a very toxic relationship. There was a question back there.
The should statements.
The should.
Exactly. What
I should,
means.
Yep.
Because you're always, oh, I should do more. Well, I should do this. Well, I should do that. And you're only telling yourself that because you're just exhausted. You can't do anything.
Yes. And you know what they say about shitting on yourself. Yes.
I think jumping to conclusions, you're assuming that because it's the hardest way, it's the best way.
Absolutely. Very good. Yes. Was there another hand over here?
Discounting puzzles.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if... I'm sorry. I was just thinking so much of motherhood. Like, some of the mothers that mother the hardest, I think, do the most damage to themselves and to their kids. And
I've been completely
like
self-sacrificed to be a good mother.
Right. And
my career, my dreams, my goals don't matter because I need to focus
on
this.
And actually, I think that's damaging to children, but when that's the way you think...
Yeah, or even the ability to have children. Like, I know many, many women who are sobbing to me. They have 4 or 5 children already. They feel overwhelmed. They feel clinically depressed. But we don't have an out. It's just like, well, I need to bring more spirits down, and so I need to have another child, and
it's
I'm pregnant again, and maybe I have postpartum depression, and now I know I'm in for 3 to 4 years of really large hardship with no option out. But I'm doing it the hard way, so hooray.
Well,
yes.
That's how we try to make women feel better, too. It's the best thing. Yes, it's hard, but don't worry about it being hard, because it's the best thing you can be doing.
Right. And in some ways, we don't even allow people to grieve that it's hard.
Yeah.
Right, because it's hard, honey, but you know the eternal perspective means that this won't. So if you're just buck up, it's okay, right?
Well, it's not that hard. It's society expectation that they place upon too. It's like, oh, well, everybody else is doing it, so therefore you have to do it. You just should just conform.
Right, right. Conformity is a big one.
What's the phrase? I didn't say it would be easy. I only said it would be
easy.
Right.
Oh. That's which Christ never said.
Yes. Yes. And like Jen, I don't know if you heard Jen, but Jen said, at which Christ never said.
Well, can I say though, I think that we can opt to take a hard path. Like, that's okay, but that's different from when somebody's telling you need to do it this way.
Yes.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. Which is a great point, because we don't want to fall either into all or nothing thinking right now. Because sometimes we do hard things. I mean, how many of you went and got a degree, right? How many of you did choose to have children? I mean, oh, how many of you chose to get married? Another, oh, how many of you, you know, so there are many hard things oftentimes can be worthwhile, right? It's the classic, do you want to pay for the popsicles now or do you want to save up for a bicycle, right? Well, you choose the harder thing because you want, you know, you want things that are worthwhile, that will take time, that will take consistency, that will take effort. Spirituality is one of those things, you know, that we can definitely talk about. But it's just when we use it in ways where we either project our own expectations on other people or we have unrealistic expectations for ourselves, or as a culture we shame each other when we don't meet certain, you know, expectations and the conformity. You know, somebody had mentioned conformity being really important, which it is in our culture. So I would encourage you all to think about each one of these things from that two-sided coin. Like, there's this side of the coin, but there's also this other side of the coin. And I'm an expert, by the way, at finding all the non-doctrinal ways we do this, right? Because most of the cultural things that are damaging are actually not doctrinal. So that's fascinating how we do that to each other and ourselves. So, yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, yes. Also genealogy. I mean, my mom. Well, you know, pioneer stock. We pull off our bootstraps.
Right. Cowboy it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know. And there's another part of it is there's never enough. We can never give enough. But there's no accountability on the side of the church. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no one saying, if I promise this and this to you, mm-hmm. it doesn't happen. I'll take that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, that's yes.
Right into our next one. As far as, yeah, if you don't receive a blessing, it's because you aren't being righteous enough. It's
we don't
your
have
fault.
The, yeah.
If you're not able to have kids, if you're dealing with infertility, it's your fault. If you're feeling depressed, it must be your fault. Just live the gospel more fully. It doesn't work so well. Might increase your depression or anxiety.
We don't have the best contractual agreement with the church, which is, I think, what you're trying to say. In other words, I have to live up to my things or my temple recommend gets taken away. And I better follow the repentance process, which I learned in primary. But, you know, the apostle can say we don't apologize, right? So we do have a double standard in the sense of how the organization functions and how individuals are expected to function, which, again, I believe is non-doctrinal. But.
In fact, I've even heard it be taught that as long as you do what your bishop asks, like, no harm will come upon you, even if they're wrong. Hey, I'm like, lots of red flags here, like...
Just give away all your authority because you can trust this other entity, right?
Okay.
I think you had a question.
No, that one is particularly terrible for bishops.
Yes.
To feel like they're responsible for every bad thing that happens to people who are faithful.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, it's hard, yeah.
And right in front of, yes.
I just remember when my son was on a mission, he sent home this quote. I'm sure everybody's heard obedience brings blessings, but exact obedience brings miracles.
Exact obedience.
Oh, oh, oh.
Right.
Which is impossible.
Because we're all so good at that.
Oh, yeah. Just read the Bible.
And why we have so many miracles just happening left and right. I mean, it's just miraculous. Yes. I hope I'm not offensive with my snarkiness, but yes, okay.
Well, I'm just going to relate a quick story. This is my dear sweet daughter who's
Hi, dear sweet
gay.
Daughter.
When my mother-in-law found out that she was gay, she blamed our lack of family home evening and consistent, you know, raising in the gospel
right.
for that, and that was about the day I said, well, I'm no longer going to take parenting advice from you.
Yes. So, yes.
But I think as Mormons, I've heard other variations of that for, you know, mm-hmm. should have done a better job. Your
Absolutely.
Kids would have gone on a mission or, you know, whatever it might be.
And the self-shame and blame I see of
and
parents.
That happens. My poor wife, I mean, for a year, you know,
what did I do that now three of my six children
right.
chose not to be members of the church? And I'm like, have we forgotten the Lehi and Sarah story? Like, it really doesn't have a lot to do with the parents, right? So, again, so non-doctrinal ways that we use this perfectionism in our culture, because when you have comments like that, the exact obedience, or after all you can do, those are all or nothing terms. Mm-hmm. And since we're not all or nothing creatures, we can't eat, we're not even wired that way, you can always find a way to blame yourself. And that goes back to the contractual issue that the church never has to take responsibility, because we all have one Monday that we didn't do family home evening, or we all have one morning that we didn't get on our knees and prayed, right? Or we all have one day that we exercised a little longer to avoid our garments, or, you know, so we all have something in our brain that says, aha, I failed that one time 10 years and 5 days ago and 20 minutes ago, and now I'm paying for it. Right? And that's a really damaging space to be in for us. And it has really, again, nothing to do with what the atonement and the doctrine of Mormonism is or should be about. Not that I want to get, I mean, this isn't a spiritual conversation, but since we're talking about Mormonism, it's just fascinating to me as a daughter of converts. Quite frankly, I don't understand my adopted family. I think you're all kind of a little loony on these kind of issues, right? Because I'm like, I thought we believed this, so why are you saying this? Does that make sense? Did you have a question back there? Here?
I just had a question. You mentioned that everyone has thinking errors, and that's amplified with institutions. Mm-hmm. But they suffer from thinking errors, too. So I'm wondering, is there any best practices of institutions that actually try to counter these, you know, thinking errors? Because you speak of the doctrine. Well, I read back from what Brigham Young said in the 1850s. I could see a lot of thinking errors in his speeches. And so I'm not sure when Mormonism ever had really good, clear doctrine without all these thinking errors.
Sure.
And now I just made a statement because it's all or nothing thinking. But I guess my thought is we all suffer from this, but institutionally, whether it's politics or whatever, it doesn't seem like there's that much progress, right?
Because yes. Okay, so I'm going to address that in a little bit later when we talk about strategies. So I just wrote your comment down. Was there a question?
Yeah, I was thinking, does this fit in with the not too good thinking, where people will tell you you're going through a horrible experience, and they always say, well, you'll learn from it. But a lot of people are going to be, like, devastated by it.
Right.
Or totally messed up by it.
Or, you know, like irrevocably,
so they'll say
altered.
It's okay because you're going to learn from that.
And that's a tricky one. Because it's true.
I know.
It's true.
Well, and not completely.
But it's circumvents.
Because we know we can break. I mean, I worked at the state hospital. There are experiences that can break us. And that doesn't mean we can't, there isn't hope and we can't, it might take time to feel whole again. But
they're fragile people.
But yes.
And it circumvents the grief cycle. Right? So it's like go from this problem to being okay with it because you're going to learn from it without the anger and the depression and the sadness and the denial and the all those steps that are very normal. Or the what?
Suicide.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, and one comment about this also is that it's important to let people figure out what meaning their own experience means to them. That's theirs. They get to figure that out. We can help them on that journey, but, you know, it's not. Only you can do that for yourself, I think.
We are very bad comforters. You know, like when you think about your friend who just lost a child, right? Or your friend who just got divorced. Or you're anxious. It brings up your own anxiety, right? We want to help. These kinds of comments are not usually because people are mean and malicious, right? They're wanting to offer a nugget. They're wanting to be helpful. Maybe that's how they would have found it helpful, for, you know, to think through it that way. But again, the listening and just the sitting with that discomfort is usually what's most helpful. Like, tell me more about that, or what is that like for you? Or what, I know that for me this was helpful. That's another way to say it. For me this idea was helpful. I don't know if it would be helpful for you, but I just want to offer it because it might be, I don't know. So that you can offer your own nuggets, but without imposing them. Like, it has to be helpful. Does that guess?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I don't even see you over here.
Right. I think these statements are really damaging. These thoughts are really damaging, even to the people who embrace them enthusiastically.
Oh, yes.
And that's where I get into problems, is to how much to confront them and challenge them, and when they're to just bite my tongue and keep quiet, or and let them rattle on, but they might be hurting other people in the room too, mm-hmm. who are not comfortable with it. Mm-hmm. And so, and our church has a culture that you know, if two Mormons are arguing with each other, and some Jewish person from New York listens to them, they won't recognize that they're arguing because they're so polite and so careful.
That's hilarious.
So I live in that culture, and I don't know whether to confront, and I don't. And I'm a therapist, but I don't. But in the Mormon context, I don't know whether I really have permission to do that, or whether I'm challenging people in ways that I don't have a right to do.
Yeah, and that's a great comment, and we could probably do a whole hour on that. Yeah.
I think,
yes.
Yes. And there's not
I
one right
way that
either.
I'd like to think about this, or something that's been helpful to me. So you can show the other side of the coin without denying.
Right.
No, actually, that's wrong. What you said was wrong.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
We call that the yes and approach. Like, yes, I can understand how you might think that way, and this has been helpful for me. Right. Or the sandwich approach. Like, oh, what a interesting thought you're having, and then this is what I think, but you are such an amazing person. You know, kind of like, you know, we sandwich the hard stuff in between two pieces of bread, right?
I see the opposite as well. You know, if you don't receive a blessing, it's because you aren't righteous. If you're not righteous, good things won't happen to you, and we almost need them to not happen, to like be a cautionary tale. A friend of mine, she was serious with her husband from the time they were 15. Super serious. And she had adults tell her, I'll bet you $100 you'll never make it to the temple. They needed her to not succeed.
Yeah.
They needed her to not have anything good happen in her life because she wasn't being righteous.
Like no premarital sex can be joyous, right?
It
or loving. Right. It has to be.
Disaster.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And if you wait, it'll be perfect, that honeymoon.
Of course.
Without any knowledge or experience.
Of course, right? Everybody can attest to that, right? I'm sure if I asked you all know. And one thing that goes along with that too is this missionary complex, right? Because we're happy Mormons, right? Because I've got the gospel, so I'm not allowed to be depressed or anything like that. Well, guess what? Now I'm a happy ex-Mormon because I can't have anything bad happen in my life, right? And so, or I'm a happy gay Mormon because everything's fine, right? I mean, so holy crap, right? Like, we're always like this, and that's just not reality. Anyway, Sarah, you had a comment.
And going back to the institutional question, I think every institution is susceptible to thinking errors. However, the ones that I've seen that have the best balance also have the best balance in voices.
Yes.
So male, female,
diversity,
gender identity,
yes.
LGBT and vulnerable populations.
Yes.
And that is absolutely fundamentally missing in our institutions.
Yes.
So where is the counterpoint of balance?
Yes. As well as other things I was going to mention, since we're talking about accountability and transparency, also things that are missing in our culture. Yeah. So when you have an organization that's able to say, yes, we make mistakes, but we have a board of directors and we're trying to address those mistakes, and they, you know, they don't have to go over the moon to apologize, but at least it's just an acknowledgement that, yes, we're working on that, or we hear that. Those institutions tend to deal with their thinking errors better than those who are like, we are absolutely right, we're authoritarian, you believe us no matter what. And it's my way or the highway.
White men's not the best way to go.
Probably not. Probably not. Hugely disappointed that just even recently we can still only come up with enough righteous people from Idaho and Utah. Interesting. There's a hand over here and then over here. Did you want to say something first?
No.
There's a view that every challenge and struggle in your life was handpicked by God just for you.
Yeah.
Isn't that lovely and special? Especially when you're in the back alley getting raped. Isn't that a lovely, special thought that God wants me to be raped so that I can learn from that? Thank you. That's a great one.
Well, and this goes to the whole institutional problem too, which is that if we assume that God personally decided all of these things, well, then yeah. How do you deal with the problem of evil? How do you deal with the problem of the suffering in your own life? Mm-hmm. Well, you have to blame God for everything because, well, apparently God made all the policies in church handbook. God decided that your bishop would apply it in a particular way. Yeah. God decided, well, if it's all God and nobody else is to blame, first of all, there's nothing you can do to fix it. Mm-hmm. And second of all, it makes God
It gives you zero authority, and the gods, it's God is a trump card that you can't cover.
How do you? And you said 15 men, 15 white men might not be the best solution. And I thought, ha, funny joke. But wait a second, they don't claim that 15 white men from Idaho and Utah run the church. They claim God does.
Right.
And
exactly.
Everything they say is God's word.
Exactly.
And that changes the equation some, right? Because you can't say, well, I disagree with you respectfully.
Right.
How do you disagree? You can't.
Respectfully. Right. No. Great point. Inflation. Right. Do you want to? We have 15 minutes left. Do you want to move into strategies? Yes. Oh yes. Well, she's.
I had a vision, and in that vision, I was having an interview with my Heavenly Father before I came down here to Earth. And my Heavenly Father said to me that he was going to send me down to Earth, and he was going to cause things to happen to me to make me stronger so that I could come back to be with him, because he loved me and wanted me to come back to be with him.
Okay, so this is a really good example of what we were talking about earlier of the two-sided coin. Mm-hmm. For some people, that concept of this was pre-planned for me, and I've been given the skills and the capability and the resilience to be able to deal with those things, is a very useful tool. It's very helpful. It sounds like it's been very helpful for your life. For others, that is not the case. So we need to make room for both experiences, for her experience and for somebody who would say that actually is the most damaging way for me to look at how I went through. And they're equally valid. So I want to honor and thank you for sharing that, because that's a very vulnerable thing to say when we've just been saying what we've been saying. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Also, when you said that, I noticed that you were owning that, and that was something that you believed. You're not, you know, that was your personal revelation, and the idea that we can make decisions and have that personal. I mean, that's powerful, you know, instead of just doing it because someone
else. And nobody
said
has
it.
The right to take away your sacred experiences.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. Do you want to move forward from this, or do you, what do you want to do?
So we also have quickly, if I can do this, a lot of self-defeating beliefs that our minds are constantly going. Often we're giving ourselves negative messages. And one of the things I think is important is to first kind of do our own work and to what we need to do to be healthy. So kind of noticing our thinking errors, our self-defeating beliefs, how we can be healthier. And we won't go through the list, but certainly it takes a little more work to figure out what our core beliefs are and what our self-defeating beliefs are, and to change those. Perfectionism.
I usually talk about the voices in your head, and I'm not talking about schizophrenic voices. So it's just, but what kind of dialogues happen, right? So I should, I am. You know, and a lot of times, especially the negative ones, unless you have narcissistic personality disorder, then we'll talk about the problems of your positive thoughts. But anyway. But most of us, it's like, I'm fat, I'm lazy, I'm not good enough, I'm not social enough, I'm anxious, I'm this, I'm that. What are people going to think of me, right? So all of these little voices, and we think those voices define us, versus being able to separate them from just little. How many of you have seen In and Out?
Inside Out.
Inside Out, right, with these little voices in your head. And that's a very useful tool to separate these little people in your head from yourself, because they're just thoughts, and we do have the capacity, we now know through neuroplasticity, to change the way we are wired. It takes practice and consistency, but we can do it so that those thoughts don't have to continue to define you the way that maybe you've done in the past.
Can you go back on the slide and let me take a picture?
Oh, yeah.
That was me, too. Oh, I was right in there. Okay. No.
Yeah. Everybody got it?
No.
Oh, come on, people. No.
I'm still
sweating from running up here. So. All right.
These are some helpful questions to ask. to ourselves, you know, when we find ourselves using, whether it's a self-defeating belief or a thinking error. You know, are expectations really reasonable? Is there any evidence for this? You know, what kind of effect is this really having on me? How useful is this belief? I love looking at that, because is it really harming you? You might, it's worth it to change it if it's something that's harming you. In fact, and that's a way to do it even without challenging your whole belief system, but it might just be about changing a behavior, you know. Faithful Mormon, I worked with that as a client who was reading the Miracle of Forgiveness, and it's not my job to challenge his beliefs, but we did talk about how helpful that was and how he was having more depression at that time and how he was starting to have suicidal thoughts. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, he came to that conclusion. It wasn't helpful for him to read that book. Yes.
Isn't the tricky thing, though, that you don't want to get stuck in a rut? Because a belief or an idea or even something that's slightly irrational can sometimes be very useful in a specific time and place. And then later on, the circumstances change. You have to be able to say, okay, this belief was very useful, but now it's not. So I have, you know, learning to have the flexibility, right, to say, okay, I'm going to reevaluate how useful it is now and do it again and again.
Well, and that reminds me of the example, which we can laugh about it, but it's kind of an example of how we actually are sometimes good at this. If your five-year-old prays because everybody just, you know, mommy just lost her keys, and then 2 minutes later, you know, the keys are found, and we're like, ooh, Heavenly, yes, Heavenly Father answered our prayers, right? But then 20 years later, mom has cancer, and we're all praying, and we're all fasting, and mom dies. We don't say Heavenly Father didn't answer our prayers. We say, well, there's a different reason here. There's a different thing. So we can you can see how that's problematic and also helpful, right? Like there's two sides to that coin, and we have that even within our own culture.
Yeah,
so I have a few tools that I wanted to talk about. We already talked about the yes and, so that's kind of the juggling metaphor, right? We can hold more than one thing at a time. If anybody has worked with me, you're probably sick of me saying this to you. So, like, yes, I can be angry, and I can love you, and I can ask you not to be in my room tonight, and I can, you know, talk to you tomorrow, and, you know, like, all of these things that we can hold at the same time. And that's a very good way to deal, especially with relationships. I call the anthropology strategy, so for those of you who are struggling to go to your current wards, if you're still going, practice what it would be like to go to Africa tribal ceremony, and how you wouldn't necessarily be raising your hand and going, well, I don't think that that's the correct way to be doing that ceremony piece, right, or whatever, but that you'd just be kind of probably curious. You might be concerned about some of the things that you're seeing or curious about the things that you're seeing. So maybe taking an anthropological lens to our own culture sometimes can be helpful.
Yes, very helpful.
I use the translation machine. So when somebody says, this is the one and only true church that will lead you to God, I'm like, this person really loves the church. And that's how I can self-soothe during testimony meeting. I don't know how many of you remember math and common denominators, right? Sometimes they're super easy, like 2 over 4 and 1 over 4, right? Or 1 over 8, you know, you can find the common denominator. Sometimes they're really hard, like you have to do a lot of math to find the common denominator, but this is kind of an idea of finding your common values with people so that there's usually something that you still both agree on. Word of wisdom, for example, maybe now I drink coffee and you think I'm going to hell, but we probably both agree that taking care of our bodies is probably important, right? And so we can find these common principles if we dig down deep enough to still find a common language with people. And then the body scan, which is what I try to do with myself. It's like, where's my head at? Where's my neck at? Where's my shoulders? Where's my middle and my genitalia and my legs? Okay, well, right now I've got some things going on in here. My shoulders are freaking out and my armpits are sweaty. Okay, that's where I'm at. But that helps me center myself a little bit. And honor my body and what it's telling me, and that probably after this and after I speak with you, I'm going to go sit down and not do anything for 5 minutes because I need that, right? And so that's a way to listen to not just, we're very cerebral, and we oftentimes don't listen to our heart or our bodies as far as what we need. Okay, so those are some of my strategies. Yeah, we have like 5 minutes left. Do we just want to open it up to questions? Yeah. Or?
Yeah.
I've got a quick one. So I, you know, obviously it's easier to identify thinking errors in other people than yourself.
Of course, it's super fun.
I saw one.
I do this for a job.
How do you deal with kids who, you know, kind of, not even church culture, but they kind of get in this, like I had a daughter come home yesterday, she's at her first job, and she got feedback for the first time. She was evaluated. She's a lifeguard. And she didn't have a perfect score. And she was just berating herself. So what do you say in that type of situation? How do you challenge that thinking error in a positive way to help her put it in perspective?
Okay. Do you want to say anything?
First, I would say just sit with her and show empathy, you know, and show her that you understand. You know.
The minute you go first into problem-solving skills, I mean, how many mm-hmm. spouses can attest to this, that when your spouse tries to fix your problem, you get slightly annoyed, right? And slightly is kind. So, so the first thing we want to do is validate. Like, that sounds really hard, honey, right? Or what does that mean to you? Or what were you hoping for? Or, you know, or just cry, you know, or just, you know, just let her just be comforted. And then ask for permission. I mean, we think about consent often only in sexual terms, but can we think about emotional consent? You know, would you be open to some thoughts that I have about the situation? And I don't know if they'd be helpful or not, but I'd like to share some ideas with you. And then, you know, I noticed that you're being a bit perfectionistic, right? Which we all tend to be, again, normalizing, right? Especially with our kids. It's not that you're broken or you're stupid. It's like humans do this stuff. This is pretty normal. I mean, I do it. I get evaluations, and it's like, if it's not a 5, I'm like, why'd they give me a 4? Like, 4 is still pretty, like, above average, right? But no, there was a problem, right? So, I mean, we all do this. Yes. So, validation, consent, suggestions. And then feedback, be open to feedback again. Was that helpful? Do you want to ignore what I said? Maybe, what are your ideas, right, about how you can deal with this?
And also, I mean, look at what developmental stage they're in, because mm-hmm. that's definitely going to...
They go, like, 8 and 10-year-olds and 12-year-olds are super idealistic. 15-year-olds are super idealistic, and on top of it, hypocrisy police people. And, like, 19-year-olds have it all figured out, right? So, I mean, you've got a normal developmental stages, and our brain doesn't develop till 26. Like, I was married and had a kid and had chosen my career by then. That's scary stuff, right? So, but being open to that your skills and the way you'd see something are obviously going to be very different than your, you know, 16-year-old or 20-year-old even, or adult children are really tricky in that way.
Differentiation.
Yes. Yeah, differentiation. Yes. Are there, yes.
So, I know minimalization was one of those thinking errors. And how is it appropriate to, because I'm a teacher and I have kids come to me with, and I don't want to minimize their problems and make them feel small and inferior and everything, but what's a way to positively help them with their problems, what they're going through, their struggles? And these are more emotional, not so much academic.
Can you give me an example, like, as far as what is something that you would be worried that you'd be minimizing?
Well, they're crying a lot, you know, and just the tears, and just, you know, crying, and they're not focusing, and I don't want to, I need you to, you know, because obviously there's a problem, there's something going on, or, you know, they want to be crying, so just, you know, offering comfort and support without brushing them aside, because I need to get on with the math.
Boy, super hard stuff. And okay, everybody just do a moment of awe for our teachers and what they put up with. Do you have anything that you want to say about that? So I think that there's boundaries, right? And so that if you can have an empathetic tone, like I notice you're upset and I notice that there's probably something you'd like to talk about. Unfortunately, this isn't probably a space where I can offer that to you right now. do you need to excuse yourself to go see the school counselor, school nurse, or something like that? I'd be happy to give you a hall pass. I'm also happy to talk to you about this after class. So that you're acknowledging that there's something that you can't address appropriately at the moment, but not feeling hijacked by this one student's experience, and you know you've got 30 other kids to take care of. Is that somewhat helpful?
What if the kid is 6?
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. No hall pass.
Yeah. Okay. Well then. Yeah. So take all that down to a lower level. You know, like, hey, I see that you're upset.
Why don't you go read a book for a little bit?
Yeah. And do you see all these other kids here that I have to take care of too? Like that's hard. It's hard for you, and it's hard for me. And I really want to, you know, help you out, but. What's something that we could do to help you out just for a few minutes so I can take care of the other kids, and then maybe I can get back to you? You know, something along those lines. So kind of, I always feel like I'm condescending. The 6-year-old's like, hi.
Yeah. What is the strategy? Because, I mean, it's not only thinking errors, but I'm thinking boundaries for the ecclesiastical leaders, because well, you commented, you can see a lot of people's thinking errors. I can see that, maybe not as much myself, but you see these all or nothing propositions or callings and stuff. I mean, and I find that Mormons, we suffer from good boundaries. We tend to ask questions that are not appropriate.
Absolutely.
And
we tend to tell people what to do, but especially when one reaches the ecclesiastical responsibility.
Yes.
But how do you do that? Because if you're very, I found if you're very honest, you get a lot of blowback. Because our culture is not used to very active, honest people. We have to be passive, and we have to sandwich in the truth between falsehoods.
So maybe next year we'll do a class on boundaries. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a whole, that's like a...
We have to be all one unified.
Right.
So
well, and I'll tell you what the main challenge is in that. When you have an authority structure where if you don't follow the rules, there's going to be consequences, then you either have to be honest and face those consequences and either then not care about it or care about it very much. Mm-hmm. Be private, which doesn't necessarily mean dishonesty. Okay, so that's a whole other thing that we could talk about for an hour. Or you can cognizantly be dishonest because you're strategic, right? So there's lots of options. But the idea, the reality is what's the meaning and values around those options, and those are very different for very different members. I mean, I have, for example, just to show you the spectrum, since I'm a sex therapist, you know, like high priest leaders or stake presidency members visiting prostitutes and having no problem going to the temple, right? Whereas I have 16-year-olds who are cutting themselves because they're masturbating, right? So that's a spectrum we have in Mormonism that nobody wants to talk about. But it's a very real reality as far as how these worthiness interviews go and how people engage in boundaries. And we don't teach good self-boundaries. But if you teach your child, you know, you can tell your bishop that's none of your business. Or I always give them the out that you can blame. Mom doesn't let me talk to you about that. They may not get to go to the temple trip.
Right.
So there's power there that even if you're good boundaried, you may suffer from the power structure. And so that's something that there's no real, like, great solution to, as long as we continue this structure that we're currently in our church. So I think that's the last question we have to take, but we're so happy to stay and answer a few more questions.